The World Health Organization estimates that 2.2 billion people globally are living with some form of vision impairment, and half of those cases apparently are preventable. Now, that is not a statistic about bad luck or unavoidable biology. That is a statistic about modifiable risk factors that are very rarely addressed, accumulating silently over decades until the damage was done. If you're new here, then hello, welcome to the channel. I'm Dr. Alex. What I want to do is walk you through what's actually happening inside your eyes as you age, why vision loss is accelerating in so many people right now, and what the evidence actually says about slowing that process down in a really meaningful way. So your eye obviously is a really, really complex organ. So it's worth building a clear picture of the key structures here. So the lens sits just behind the pupil, that dark circle in the center of your eye. When you're young, that lens is very flexible, constantly changing shape to shift focus between near and distant objects. As you age, it stiffens, and that's why reading becomes harder for most people over the age of 40. The lens can basically no longer flex enough to focus up close, and it affects virtually everybody past the age of 45 to 50 to some degree. This is just normal biology. This is not a disease. And needing reading glasses is not in itself a cause for concern. But the lens is only one part of the story. At the back of the eye sits the retina, which is a thin layer of tissue lining the inside of the eye that works like the film in an old camera, capturing the image and then converting it into signals that your brain can read. It is one of the most metabolically demanding tissues in your entire body, meaning it needs an enormous and continuous supply of blood and oxygen and nutrients just to sort of function normally. And when that supply is disrupted through disease or poor circulation or cumulative damage over years, that deterioration is slow and silent and in many cases irreversible. And then we've got the optic nerve. So that is the cable that sort of carries all of that visual information from the retina back to the brain. Raised pressure inside the eye can compress and gradually damage those nerve fibers over time. That is what glaucoma basically is. And the particularly dangerous thing about that is that the outer edges of your vision go first, because we naturally compensate without realizing it. Most people don't notice anything is wrong until significant and permanent damage has already occurred. So when I talk about protecting your eyes, I mean all of this together, not just changing a prescription, but the health of the whole entire system and what's driving it to decline faster than it should. So why is vision loss accelerating then? Well, the Brian Holden Vision Institute projects that 50% of the global population will be short-sighted by 2050. In the year 2000, that figure was 23%. So short-sightedness, where distant objects are blurry but close ones are pretty clear, this is caused by the eyeball growing slightly too long, so that light focuses just in front of the retina rather than directly on it, if that makes sense. And that shift from 23% to 50% in half a century cannot be explained by genetics. Genetic changes in a population take generations, not decades. Something about the way we're living is driving this, and it's not only short-sightedness. Macular degeneration, which affects central vision, diabetic retinopathy, where blood sugar damages the vessels at the back of the eye, and dry eye disease are all becoming more common as well, appearing earlier than previous generations experienced. Now, understanding why this is happening really matters, because the same forces driving the rise are the ones that you can push back against. The first driver here is sustained near focus. So reading or phones or computers or tablets, your eye has a ring of muscle that controls the shape of the lens. And that muscle is working under constant contraction whenever you're focused on something close. The evidence is now so robust that prolonged near work or without adequate breaks or time looking into the distance is a significant contributor to short-sightedness progressing over time. In children, the eyeball can physically elongate in response to this. The eye can actually get longer from front to back, and that structural change is permanent. In adults, though, the picture is a bit more nuanced, but the cumulative strain over decades contributes to visual fatigue, early onset of reading difficulties, and a higher burden on an already stressed visual system. Now, the second driver is something that far fewer people have actually heard about, and that is natural daylight. So not a bright room, not artificial lighting of any kind, but actual outdoor daylight. Research has consistently shown across multiple countries and study designs that time spent outside is one of the most protective factors against short-sightedness developing and worsening. And the leading mechanism here involves dopamine, which is a chemical messenger, being released into the retina when it's exposed to natural light. This retinal dopamine appears to regulate healthy eye growth and slow the elongation that drives short-sightedness. Outdoor light is also orders of magnitude brighter than indoor lighting, even on an overcast, cloudy day. A typical office sits at around 300 to 500 lux, LUX, lux being the unit that we use to measure light intensity. Outdoor daylight, even in winter, routinely exceeds 10,000 lux. The human eye, remember, evolved under natural light across hundreds of thousands of years, and the near total shift to indoor environments over the last few generations is having really big consequences at a population level. Now, smoking really does deserve to be named here directly because it's frequently buried in the small print when it should be absolutely front and centre. We know that smoking roughly doubles your risk of age-related macular degeneration, an effect size comparable to smoking's relationship with lung cancer. This is really, really strong. The mechanism involves oxidative damage, essentially accelerated wear and tear at the cellular level to your retinal tissue, combined with impaired blood flow through the vessels that supply the outer retina. Now, from a preventable disease standpoint, smoking is the single most impactful lifestyle risk factor for macular degeneration, and it doesn't receive anything like the attention it warrants in conversations about eye health. I bet most doctors don't even bring this up. And then we've got metabolic health, which is arguably the most consequential factor for people in midlife and beyond, apart from smoking, obviously. So diabetic retinopathy, damage to the tiny blood vessels at the back of the eye caused by chronically high blood sugar, is one of the leading causes of blindness in working age adults. And the mechanism here is pretty straightforward. So glucose in excess is toxic to small blood vessels. The capillaries, which are the smallest blood vessels in the body that supply the retina, are among the most vulnerable anywhere in the body. And years of elevated blood sugar causes them to leak and to proliferate abnormally and eventually to fail. Now, high blood pressure compounds this through, well, a similar mechanism, increasing the physical stress on those same blood vessel walls over time. What makes this particularly significant from a clinical standpoint is that the retina is one of the only places in the body where a doctor can look directly at blood vessels without cutting or any sort of invasive procedure. We use an ophthalmoscope to look at the back of the eye. And what we see at the back of the eye reflects with remarkable accuracy what is happening throughout your entire cardiovascular system. Basically, what I'm saying is that your eye health is not a separate conversation from your metabolic health. That is the same conversation. Now, a lot of people come to a video like this expecting blue light from screens to be the main villain. So let's just focus on this for a couple of minutes. The evidence that screen-emitted blue light causes structural damage to the retina at the levels people are actually exposed to in daily life is currently pretty weak. The wavelengths and the intensities used in lab studies to demonstrate light-induced retinal damage are substantially higher than anything your phone or computer screen could produce. So that doesn't mean that screens are harmless, far from it. Sustained near focus, a reduced blink rate, and disrupted sleep from evening screen use are all real and well-established problems. But the specific claim that the light from the screens is gradually damaging your retina is not well supported at this point. Where blue light genuinely matters is in its effect on the body's internal clock. So evening exposure to blue light suppresses melatonin, which is the hormone that signals to the body that it's time to sleep. And that delays your sleep onset and it degrades your sleep quality. And poor sleep has its own downstream consequences for your eye health, which I'll come on to in a couple of minutes. Making this distinction really matters because it moves the conversation away from blue light glasses, which have limited evidence behind them for retinal protection, and towards things that actually make a meaningful difference, according to the evidence anyway. Let's talk about the three conditions that matter the most. So macular degeneration, which I've mentioned a couple of times, affects the central part of your vision, the precise area you rely on for things like reading and recognizing faces and driving as well. The macula is a very small but critical region at the very center of the retina, and when it deteriorates, the central field of vision becomes blurred and distorted and eventually lost, while your peripheral or sort of side vision often remains. It's the leading cause of irreversible vision loss in adults over 50 across much of the developed world. Now, the early stages are almost always completely symptom-free, which is why the condition is typically discovered either at a routine eye examination or once a lot of damage has already occurred. Now, the age-related eye disease studies, and I'll put a link in the description below, these are the landmark trials in this area. They demonstrated that specific combinations of antioxidant nutrients could slow the progression of immediate macular degeneration by around 25% in people already affected. Separately, epidemiological data, so large population studies tracking diet and disease over time, consistently shows that higher dietary intake of two specific nutrients called lutein and zeaxanthin is associated with significantly lower rates of advanced disease. This is a direct relationship between what you eat and whether you lose your central vision in later life. And smoking, as we've already mentioned, doubles that risk, making stopping smoking one of the most, you know, important changes that anybody could make. Now, glaucoma is frequently called the silent thief of sight, and that description is pretty accurate. It damages the optic nerve very gradually. It takes the outer edges of your vision first and progresses over years or decades without causing any pain or obvious symptoms. The overwhelming majority of people have absolutely no idea it's happening. And by the time central vision is affected, the disease is usually advanced and the nerve damage is permanent, unfortunately. Raised pressure inside the eye, caused by a buildup of the fluid that normally circulates within it, is the primary known risk factor. And the ocular hypertension treatment study demonstrated that reducing that pressure significantly lowered the risk of glaucoma developing in high-risk individuals. But raised pressure is not the only risk factor. The proportion of people develop glaucoma with completely normal pressure readings, which is why pressure testing alone isn't sufficient. So the broader message here is pretty straightforward. Glaucoma found early is manageable. Glaucoma found late is a very different situation. So regular eye examinations are not optional past the age of 40. Now, dry eye disease, which is the third condition, doesn't carry the same weight as the other conditions I've just mentioned, but it is the most common eye complaint in adults, and its prevalence is rising pretty sharply. So your tear film, you know, the thin multi-layered coating that covers the surface of the eye with every blink, does far more than sort of keeping the eye comfortable. It is critical for optical clarity, and chronic disruption of it causes surface inflammation that can affect your vision quality over time. Using screens quite a lot reduces your blink rate significantly, from a normal rate of around 15 or 20 blinks per minute down to as low as 5 or 6 during sustained focus. And each missed blink is a missed opportunity to refresh and stabilize that tear film. Air conditioning as well, low humidity environments, and contact lenses all compound this problem as well. Dry eye is rarely vision threatening in itself, but it affects the daily quality of life considerably and is in large part a modern lifestyle problem with pretty straightforward behavioral solutions. And in terms of what you can do, I need to be really honest with you, you cannot reverse the structural elongation of a short-sighted eye through lifestyle changes. You cannot restore vision lost to advanced macular degeneration. The goal is to protect what you have and slow what is modifiable. And the range of what's modifiable is a lot wider than people tend to appreciate. Now, the 20-20-20 rule is simple and it's really worth building into your day. So every 20 minutes of sustained near work, so looking at your phone or a laptop or a screen or whatever, look at something at least 20 feet away for 20 seconds. And what that does is that it breaks the sustained contraction of the muscle controlling your lens. It reduces accumulating eye strain and decreases the daily burden on your visual system. It also naturally increases your blink rate as well, which matters for your tear film stability and dry eye, which we mentioned earlier. It won't change a prescription or treat a disease, but across a working day, it does make a meaningful difference to your comfort and to cumulative load as well. As well as that, spending time outside every single day is one of the most evidence-supported recommendations in this entire field. A 2015 meta-analysis, a study pooling the results of multiple individual trials published in Ophthalmology, found that each additional hour per week spent outdoors was associated with a 2% reduction in short-sightedness risk in children, and the retinal and vascular benefits of outdoor activity extend across the lifespan. So for anybody over the age of 50, this also combines with the cardiovascular and metabolic and musculoskeletal benefits of daily movement in a way that is essentially impossible to argue against. Now, eating for your eye health means, in practice, eating for your overall health. And the overlap is pretty much complete there. So leafy greens, particularly spinach and kale, are the richest dietary sources of lutein and zeaxanthin, the two pigments that accumulate specifically in the macula, where they act as a natural filter against high energy light and as direct antioxidants, mopping up the damaging molecules that accumulate in retinal tissue over years. Higher concentrations of these pigments in the macula are consistently associated with lower rates of macular degeneration. Oily fish as well, so sardines and mackerel and salmon, these provide really healthy omega-3 fatty acids, particularly one called DHA, that form a core structural component of the cell membranes making up the retina. The retina has one of the highest concentrations of DHA of any tissue in the body, and inadequate intake has been associated with accelerated retinal aging and worsening dry eye. Now, vitamin A deserves a specific mention here because its role in vision is absolutely fundamental. The retina uses vitamin A to produce a pigment called rhodopsin, a light-sensitive molecule inside the rod cells, which are the photoreceptors responsible for vision in dim light. Now, every time a rod cell is activated by light, rhodopsin is broken down and must be regenerated. And that process depends entirely on a continuous supply of vitamin A. Even a mild deficiency in people eating a really narrow or heavily processed diet can impair your night vision and accelerate photoreceptor aging. Liver and eggs and dairy and orange and yellow vegetables, which provide a precursor that the body converts into vitamin A, are the main dietary sources here. Colourful vegetables more broadly provide the antioxidant load that counters the oxidative stress building up in retinal tissue over years. For the general population, the evidence supports getting all of this from foods rather than supplements and eating them consistently over time. Another point to mention is about aerobic exercise. So regular aerobic exercise has really big benefits for your eye health that go beyond its metabolic effect. So a 2021 study in the British Journal of Ophthalmology found that higher levels of physical activity were independently associated with lower rates of glaucoma, even after accounting for other variables. And the proposed mechanism here involves improved blood flow to the optic nerve and pretty modest reductions in eye pressure with regular cardiovascular exercise. It reinforces the point that the lifestyle protecting your heart is also directly protecting your vision, not just as a general association, but through specific physiological pathways. Now, controlling your blood sugar and your blood pressure are some of the most important things that you can do for your long-term retinal vascular health. The UK prospective diabetes study showed that tight blood glucose control in people with type 2 diabetes reduced the risk of microvascular complications, damage to the small blood vessels, including those in the retina, by 25%. This is massive. Every meaningful reduction in average blood sugar translates to real, measurable protection for the vessels at the back of your eye. Now, your blood pressure control matters just as much as well. We're talking about the same vessels, the same walls of those vessels, and the same risk. Sleep and evening light exposure are more consequential as well than they're given credit for. The pressure inside the eye follows a daily rhythm. It tends to peak early in the morning, and poor sleep disrupts its regulation in ways that matter for glaucoma risk over time. As well as that, dry eye gets worse with inadequate sleep, partly because the extended period of closed lids overnight is the primary window during which the surface of the eye recovers and the tear film restores itself. And chronic late night exposure to blue spectrum light suppresses your melatonin, it degrades your sleep quality, and it feeds back into every system discussed in this video. The important thing here is to get your eyes examined regularly. You need a full dilated eye examination where they put drops in your eyes that sort of temporarily widen the pupil so the entire retina can be examined. Do it every 2 years from the age of 40 and then annually from the age of 60. What this does is that it allows early detection of glaucoma and macular degeneration and diabetic retinopathy and other conditions at a stage where intervention is still an option. Glaucoma caught early is managed. Macular degeneration caught at an intermediate stage can be slowed down. So these are not conditions to discover late. And the examination itself is pretty straightforward and it takes around 20 or 30 minutes and it's pretty cheap as well. So let me just end with this. Vision loss is not primarily a story about your eyes in isolation. It is a story about how you live, your diet, your metabolic health, your daily environment, how much time you spend in natural light, whether you smoke, how well you sleep, how regularly you exercise. All of it feeds directly into how your visual system ages, just like your heart and your kidneys and your brain as well. And just like cardiovascular disease or type 2 diabetes, the damage doesn't arrive suddenly. As with everything else, it builds quietly, driven by small daily factors that feel insignificant individually but compound into really serious consequences over decades. Now, the people who maintain really sharp functional vision into their 70s and 80s are not simply fortunate, they are managing the modifiable risk factors consistently over a long enough period that it makes a structural difference. Your eyes, remember, are not separate from the rest of your body. They are a window into its overall health, and they age at the same rate and for the same reasons as well. So if you look after your body and your overall health, then you look after your vision as well.